This is the Heritage Radio News, bringing you top food stories from down the street and around the world with your Heritage Radio News team, Erica Wides, Patrick Martins, Jack Kinsley on sports, and Mike Edison on weather.
This is Heritage Radio Network News. Today is June 9th. I'm Erica Wides, co-anchoring today with Mike Edison. Hi, Mike.
All right. Promoted out of the weather ghetto.
Out of the weather ghetto. Our Patrick Martins is out, so Mike has stepped in from the weather booth in to co-anchor with me. And, we've got our own Jack Inslee piping up later on sports. Our top stories this week, the fish are biting unusual bait. People are biting fish in Japan, India, and China, and celebrities dictate what you bite into. Oh, very interesting biting theme we've got going on this week. And Jack, do we know what Jack's got for us from sports? So we'll find out in a little bit.
Jack's going to have a report from Bonnaroo.
Oh, Jack's at Bonnaroo. Okay, so we'll be hearing from Jack live.
I wonder what kind of sports are going on there.
Bonnaroo. And Mike, what about you?
Water sports.
Mike, you're filling two chairs today. What have you got in the weather?
I don't even want to go back to the weather ghetto. I'm feeling like pretty comfortable here. But we do have a report on everyone's favorite climate change denier, Donald Trump.
Ah, excellent. I can't wait to hear about that one. A lot of hot air. Okay, well, now for our top story this week. So as we've been reporting recently over the past couple of episodes, the world's bluefin tuna population has been plummeting precipitously for decades. Tuna stocks are at a tenth of what they were 50 years ago, as the world's most populous countries, India and China, globalize and develop a taste for sushi. But now Japan, a country that is largely to blame for the overfishing of the species, is acting to regulate at least some of its tuna fishing industry. According to Nikkei Asian Review, the country's fisheries agency plans to institute oversight measures for fixed net fishing practices in an attempt to curb the rapid drop-off in the tuna population. This is a very surprising announcement because it comes after years of Japan rejecting any sort of regulation to their tuna industry. Bluefin tuna in Japan, of course, we know, is a very valuable commodity, not only within the country, but also abroad. One restaurant mogul in Japan, Kiyoshi Kimura, routinely pays hundreds of thousands of dollars for the coveted fish, whose population has declined by 97% since the 1960s, as we have previously reported on this show. Japan consumes 80% of the world's bluefin tuna catch, and they've been criticized internationally for not controlling its overfishing in order to help save the species, while other countries have instituted voluntary measures on fishing. The Guardian, British newspaper, reported that while it's made attempts to lower the maximum catchable amounts of tuna, Japan was one of several countries that met last fall where they failed to agree on population recovery measures. And finally, after global pressure, Japan has developed tangible plans for new measures, including the institution of temporary fishing bans for particularly overfished areas, and they've set seasonal schedules for fishing regions. And as we reported here a few weeks ago, the bluefin tuna may be getting at least a tiny little break due to the growing popularity of meat in Japan. As their population ages and are eating less food overall, and younger generations are apparently opting for beef now instead of eating fish there. So while eating meat is not usually a solution, if it helps one endangered species, then we have no beef with it.
So should I really be staying away from tuna at all costs, Erica?
Yes.
I was at a sushi restaurant the other night, and I ordered just a regular old sushi, you know, regular. I chose the salad over the soup. but it comes with tuna on the plate, and I feel kind of guilty.
I had
this great pang of, you know, I guess that's what Japanese and Jewish people have in common, we like fish and we're guilty. Yeah.
And also, because this is probably my third story on the bluefin tuna now since we've gone on air, because it's my little pet.
Well, it's working. You've gotten under my skin.
I'm a little obsessed with the decline of the bluefin and yellowfin tuna. Yeah, I mean, I don't eat tuna at all, not just because of overfishing, but also because of the mercury concentration in it. You know, I think I've said this before, as I'm getting older, I'm getting dumber, and I don't want to...
Mad as a hatter.
I don't want to hasten that process more than I need to. But anyway, so Mike, what have you got for us?
One other thing. You know what other thing Jewish people and Japanese people have in common? We love pickles.
We do love
anything pickled.
It's true.
It's true. We have a real, like, vinegar pickle culture.
That's very true. An obsession with fish and pickles.
It's true.
Huh.
Think about that.
I think you're right. And ritual.
And ritual.
Ritual, yes. All right. Well, Mike, you're sitting in the anchor chair this week.
I love this chair. It's just so much better than the weather chair.
The weather chair is not comfortable. It's always kind of damp. No.
Well, this week we've got more celebrity clickbait. According to a study published this week in the journal Pediatrics and reported by various sources, including Time Magazine and the Huffington Post, food and beverages endorsed by pop stars and celebrities are almost exclusively unhealthy, and the most common being soda, sugar drinks, fast food, and sweets. The author of the report, Marie Bragg, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Population Health at NYU, commented about her research. She said, teens are seeing a lot of ads for these types of products that are associated with things like obesity and childhood diabetes. And she continued, we already know that other studies have shown that exposure to food ads can lead young people to overeat in the short term. The link between celebrity endorsements of junk food and childhood obesity, one of our country's major health problems, of course, cannot be overlooked. Pepsi claims more musician endorsements than any other brand in the study. They have a roster including Blake Shelton, Britney Spears, Bruno Mars, Calvin Harris, Christina Aguilera, and Enrique Iglesias. That's just the people I've actually heard of.
I don't know who Calvin Harris is.
I looked at the list and honestly, I felt very old.
Yeah.
The study's authors are calling for more research on the effect of music celebrities' endorsements on children and adolescents. Meanwhile, among the worst offenders are Will.i.am, who endorses Coca-Cola, Doritos, Dr. Pepper, and Pepsi, Britney Spears, who endorses McDonald's along with Pepsi, Justin Timberlake, who does that stupid Chili's jingle, not to mention the I'm Lovin' It McDonald's song, so that guy's picture should be at a post office as most wanted, and Snoop Dogg, who pimps for Hot Pockets and Monster Energy Drink, which just goes to show you how craven the junk food business. If they think a guy who's most famous for singing about bitches and hoes and one of the most famously excessive marijuana users on the planet, he's a notorious porn producer, and this is the guy you want to be your pitchman for after-school toaster snacks? The irony, of course, is that marijuana and porn are a lot healthier for you.
Yeah, I mean, we all have to choose our, our after-school activities wisely. Well, thanks for that somewhat editorialized story there, Mike Edison.
Marijuana and porn. It's made me the man I am today.
And Hot Topics and Hot Pockets go hand in hand, actually.
It's easy to connect the dots.
It is. And don't forget that, remember years ago, Michael Jackson was shooting a Pepsi ad and his hair caught on fire. So not exactly.
And then he died of a drug overdose.
Not exactly a role model. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. That was great. And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, our famous fast food minute. We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of 3 Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network News. I'm Erica Wides, and we've got Mike Edison sitting in on the anchor chair this week. And now for our Fast Food Minute. First, we're going to Rachel, our very own producer.
Aw, thanks, Erica. Mm-hmm. Well, being a vegan in Brooklyn is easy, even if you're made fun of a little bit, okay, a lot, and often have to spend more money for your non-dairy milk. But in Georgia, the former Soviet Republic, not the state, it could be downright dangerous. Last week, patrons of the vegan restaurant Kiwi Cafe were pelted with meat, sausage, and fish by self-proclaimed anti-vegan extremists and neo-Nazis. After investigation, it became apparent that it was also an attack against the LGBT community that often hung out in the cafe. But honestly, aren't they disrespecting the meat by throwing it at people instead of eating it? I mean, they might as well be vegan themselves, right?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Respect the meat. Don't waste it.
Yeah.
Plenty of people hungry in the world. Respect the meat.
Yeah. Respect the meat.
And the vegans. Although not as much.
Respect, yo.
Respect.
We get no respect.
Mike Edison, what have you got?
Well, I've got a story about the Dairy Queen, speaking about the LGBT community. with its new hardest working happy hour. The hardest working happy hour. I love that. It sounds good. And yet, this is just deals on fraps and smoothies. But what they're looking to get into the 2 to 5 p.m. time slot. I didn't even know that was a thing, the 2 to 5 p.m. time slot, by marketing energy-boosting drinks to women. Dairy Queen recently partnered with Olympic gymnast Shawn Johnson, a retired artistic gymnast, it says here. Johnson is also a mommy blogger and is apparently just what DQ is looking for. Our bullseye target is the mid-millennial female, says Maria Hokanson, who's VP of U.S. Product and Brand Marketing for Dairy Queen. And honestly, I have no idea what a mid-millennial is. I swear to God, I Googled it, and what came up was all about rap. In the second coming of Christ. But to Dairy Queen, this means young women who need a little bit of mommy's little helper. That's the 2 to 5 p.m. window, which happens to coincide with the end of the school day, making it an ideal time to grab a snack at the drive-through window after picking up the kids and presumably feed your kids a bunch of crap, too.
Yeah, you know, that mid-afternoon snack thing has really turned into like a meal. Like, it's like one of those fourth meal things. I mean, when I was a kid, we would come home, and my mom would hand me, like, a Fig Newton and a carrot. Now, it's like you get picked up by your mom, you go to Starbucks, you go to Dairy Queen. It's like this whole big production.
Yeah, Fig Newton and a carrot. That's basically in your house as well. That's pretty much it.
A lot of cash layout going on this mid-afternoon
No one ever took me to McDonald's after school.
Yeah, seriously. We didn't even have Dairy Queen in our town. All right, and this week's Fast Food Minute, we have a special guest. We have Dave Tatt in the control room. Dave, what have you got?
Well, thanks, Erica. Man's best friend can now sup on cod or organic beef at Aveni Familien in the western city of Gothenburg, with non-alcoholic dog beer made from beef stock set to be added to the menu in July. Restaurant boss Tobias Hamburg says, "For a couple of years, we've allowed dogs into our restaurant. The next step was to offer water bowls, and now we also offer a special dog menu. Most dogs prefer the beef, and they usually take their meals on the floor near to the feet of their owners. Like a few other eateries around the globe that offer up pet treats, Aveni Familien and two other restaurants from the same chain are hoping the move will attract customers from diners who just can't bear to leave their furry friends at home."
Great. Did you say the dog prefers beef? Does that insinuate that the dog is ordering?
It's possible.
Well, if they put a bowl of beef and a bowl of, you know, reindeer in front of them, what are they going to pick? What you forgot to mention there, Dave, is we're talking about Sweden, country of Sweden.
Oh, Sweden,
Gothenburg,
that's correct.
Sweden, yeah. Well, that's just what the world needs.
That's just shoddy writing. Sorry,
restaurants for dogs, yeah. Well, is it Taylor ham or Taylor pork roll?
Oh.
Mike, you're from Jersey, right?
Oh, this is the dirty jurors. This is important.
Is it Taylor ham or Taylor pork roll?
It's pork roll.
You're from the north.
201, baby.
Yeah. Well, if you're from New Jersey, you probably have strong opinions on the name of New Jersey's favorite pork product. As a native New Yorker myself, I couldn't care less what it's called. But even President Obama got in on the discussion this month in his commencement speech at Rutgers, where he piped up on his opinion about it. The spiced pork cold cut, usually served fried on a roll with egg and cheese, is being put forth by food-loving Governor Chris Christie as the official sandwich of New Jersey. But as a northern New Jerseyite, the governor insists that it's Taylor ham, not pork roll. Perhaps he can use some of his notorious executive power to speed the conversation along and not let it get too tied up in a traffic jam of indecision.
Oh, man. He's so coming down on the wrong side of history again. He's just wrong.
Right.
This guy is the worst. It's pork roll, okay? Take it from me. It's pork roll. Ham.
You know, I grew up in New York. I really couldn't give a crap what it's called. But I ate it for the first time a few weeks ago. I had never had it before. It's actually really tasty.
It's New Jersey soul food.
I consulted on a restaurant, and we did a Jersey Cubano. We did a Cuban sandwich using pork roll.
Dunkin' Donuts has one now, and they're calling it pork roll.
I just saw that. Can you imagine the marketing meetings about that?
I've never heard it called ham, to be honest with you, ever. In my whole Jersey
Taylor
experience,
ham,
it's Taylor pork roll.
I don't know. I'm from Long Island. You know, we ate clams. All right. Well, that's it for our Fast Food Minute. Wraps up for the week. Coming up after the break, we may be fishing tuna to death, but other fish seem to be bringing about their own destruction. We'll be right back after the break.
Hi there. I'm Greg from Kapow. Visit us at kapow.com to check out our unique collection of everyday reusable products designed to help you do more with less. CUPPOW.com.
All right, and we're back here, Heritage Radio News, streaming, broadcasting live from Bushwick at Roberta's Pizza.
Well, for our next story, think twice before you throw away that plastic bottle or that old broken toy, because plastics in our waste stream that aren't recycled often make their way to the ocean, where they're churned and bashed into tiny particles of microplastics. I'm sure you've all heard of the Pacific Gyre, the miles-long morass of plastic floating in the ocean. Well, now researchers have warned that larval fish looking for food seem to prefer to eat the plastic rather than their actual food. The microparticles of plastic kill the fish, of course, and with growing fears that the amount of plastic in the oceans will soon equal the biomass weight of fish in the sea, scientists have become increasingly concerned about the effects on the marine environment. A study in the journal Science has found that baby perch will actively choose to eat plastic over the plankton they would normally feed on. The researchers said this greatly increased mortality rates of the perch, stunting their growth and appearing to change usually innate behaviors like losing the ability to smell a predator, which makes the fish that much more vulnerable. Professor Peter Elkoff, a co-author of the science paper, said, "This is the first time an animal has been found to preferentially feed on plastic particles and is cause for concern. Increases in microplastic pollution in the Baltic Sea and marked declines of the coastal keystone species, like perch and pike, have recently been observed. Our study suggests a potential driver for the observed increased mortality." That's pretty freaky. "When placed in a tank with a pike, perch exposed to microplastic were eaten four times more quickly than the perch that had not been eating plastic. All the plastic-fed fish were killed within 48 hours. A fellow researcher stressed that the effects of prey fish eating large amounts of plastic was likely to be felt profoundly throughout the food chain. Microplastic is produced as larger pieces of plastic waste are broken down in the environment, but vast amounts of microfibers from synthetic clothes, like that cozy fleece jacket you like to wear in the fall, which are essentially made of plastic, are produced each time they're washed and are small enough to pass through sewage treatment plants and get into the sea." So you could be like Mike and just, you know, never wash your jacket, I suppose. Cosmetics companies are also continuing to put plastic microbeads into their products, with the industry saying it will try to phase them out by 2020. I mean, I think we can all deal with a slightly duller complexion and wearing natural fibers if it means the, you know, slowing down the demise of our ocean species.
I think it's unbelievable. What did you say, that the amount of like junk in the ocean is now actually equaling the fish?
That's what they're
saying. The good stuff.
The amount of plastic in the ocean is estimated to equal the biomass of the fish.
That's heartbreaking.
Which
I mean, it's just mind-boggling and heart-rending.
And the thing about the fleece clothing is really interesting. I just heard about that recently, that the microfibers of your fleece can pass right through sewage filtration systems, and they get out into the ocean, and the fish are eating those, too. It's not just the water bottles and, you know, face bead scrubs. So it's pretty freaky stuff.
And by the way, this jacket is washed. It's just distressed. It's distressed.
Well, you know, since Patrick's not here to make mean comments, it's my job, apparently. Yeah. All right. Well, Lee, that leads us right up into the weather.
I'm moving back over to the weather chair.
Hop back in your chair. And what have you got?
I like the weather. I like the weather. I like the thunderclap sound. I feel like I'm at an AC/DC concert. All right. More clickbait is reported by the Washington Post. Donald Trump calls global warming a hoax until it threatens his golf course. And to protect his golf course, guess what he wants to do? He wants to build a wall. What is it with this guy? His walls. He's like the Pink Floyd of real estate. And now that I think about it, it kind of looks like they're a famous inflatable pig. And I wouldn't mind seeing him tethered above a rock festival having people shoot bottle rockets at him. But that is a story for another time. We're talking about walls and golf courses and Donald Trump, of course. The Trump International Golf Links in Ireland, which is right by the sea in Ireland's County Clare, faces the Atlantic's pounding waves and coastal erosion. And as reported by Politico, the Trump organization has submitted a permit to build a giant seawall, which raises, you know, the sea levels from to protect it from rising sea levels as a result of climate change. If the predictions of an increase in sea level rise as a result of global warming prove correct, however, it is likely there will be a corresponding increase in coastal erosion rates, not just in Dogmore Bay, but much more around the coastline of Ireland, the application notes. This is Donald Trump's organization. In our view, it could reasonably be expected that the rate of sea level rise might become twice that of presently occurring. And we are talking about a wall here that will measure up to anything Trump wants to build on the Mexican border. Apparently, he lives in as much fear of rising tides as he does brown-skinned men. And he's looking for something to make even bigger than his much-taunted Mexican wall. This is something that would make even Roger Waters' plots. He was talking something like a 20-meter-tall wall around a golf course. Of course, environmentalists pounced on the apparent self-contradiction. According to the Washington Post, former Congressman Bob Inglis, a Republican from South Carolina who supports conservative efforts to mitigate global warming, told Politico that the dissonance between Trump's public stance and his business practice is diabolical. I think diabolical is a pretty big word coming from a Republican, even one who isn't claiming climate change to be a hoax. And I wonder if institutionalized racism falls under that same umbrella.
Well,
diabolical.
That umbrella's probably got holes in it from all the acid rain falling from the sky now. But that's yet more wacky shenanigans from Donald Trump.
I'm looking forward to, I gotta say, I feel guilty as I do when I eat the tuna at the sushi place down on Court Street, but I'm kind of, I mean, every day it's something new.
I know, it's...
I mean, I'm just as bad as everyone else. I click, I see Donald Trump on the front page, and I go, bink, I still want to read it. I just can't believe the garbage, the effluence that comes out of this guy, and I'm shocked and amazed, and it's gory, and I'm you know, I'm like, it's like political rubbernecking, you know, I'm like turning around to see the wreck, but I can't help myself.
I get like a visceral, nauseated reaction when I see or hear him, so I just shut it off.
Yeah,
so.
The garbage coming out of Donald Trump is now equal to the amount of fish in the ocean.
is equal to the amount of garbage in the entire Republican Party.
Exactly. All right, well, we're going to take another break. When we come back, it's sports time. Woo!
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
All right, we're back. Heritage Radio News, and you know what that sound means? It means it's time for sports. It's the sound of men dancing in the locker room.
Is that what happens at Bonnaroo?
I guess so.
What do we got? We got Jack Inslee coming up.
Hey guys, happy to be calling in here for the Sports Report. This is Jack Inslee. I'm actually joining you right now from Chattanooga, Tennessee. After a 17-hour nonstop drive, I feel absolutely drained and exhausted. Mike, this must be what you feel like every day. Well, I do have another fun sports story for you. We're talking NBA Finals again, and well, the Cavs came back, at least for one game. I got to listen to it on the radio. LeBron led his team to a rousing Game 3 victory, bringing the series score to 2-1, Warriors advantage. And you know what it made me think? It must be the food, right? Maybe the Warriors are back on sweets and messing up. Maybe LeBron went on a juice cleanse. Well, it turns out team chef Terry Bell of the Cavs has been posting Instagram photos recently of the healthy meals he cooks for the players in these playoff series, and maybe that has something to do with the newfound energy the team has. Photos include meals like a spread of roasted vegetables, fish, and chicken. Kevin Love shared some meals online as well, including things like grilled chicken, breast, yams, rice, and salad, as well as almond butter and applesauce, though those healthy meals seem to have done nothing to help him recover from his concussion. The chef Bell serves the team clean dishes like veggie quinoa, grilled honey lime salmon, and chicken sausage gumbo, according to Cleveland 19. He also makes recipe videos in case fans want to partake in the healthy cooking. Even just as a gesture, it's really nice to see teams proud of what they're eating and sharing that online. Hopefully it rubs off on some fans, and you know, I look forward to following the diets of these players here and seeing how this series shakes up. Anyway, I'm going to hit the road. We've got some incredible DJ sets ahead of us here at Bonnaroo, so I've got my hands full. But Mike, I know that you are capably filling in for Patrick, so have a great show, everyone.
Thanks, Jack. That's our very own mid-millennial, Jack Inslee, calling in from Bonnaroo. I think it's even wearing him out these days, this life.
Bonnaroo, I don't know how he does it.
Life as a mid-millennial.
Have you ever been to one of those things?
No.
Bonnaroo, or I went to Coachella a few years ago. The scope is, it's unbelievable. I mean, just how large. I mean, when we were kids, a rock concert meant something entirely different.
Yeah, no, those years are long gone for me. But, you know, it's interesting, like those sports guys eating all that really healthy food. There are very few endorsement deals for things like carrots and quinoa, you know, so they're not going to get those endorsement deals like you were talking about with all the celebrities and their Pepsi and their Doritos. So it's kind of interesting that, you know,
yeah,
they're not contractually obligated to eat McDonald's and Fritos. So. Anyway, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll have our weekly editorial. We'll be right back.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's. Roberta'sPizza.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network News from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm Erica Wides, anchoring along with Mike Edison this week. And our op-ed this week comes from friend of the network, friend of mine, and customer service consultant Kate Edwards. Kate Edwards was actually just a guest on my show, Let's Get Real, last week, and she is the author of the book Hello and Every Little Thing After That. So welcome to Heritage Radio, Kate.
Thanks, guys. Recently, I was shopping at Eataly, and at the exit, I came across a sign that read, "How do you rate this Eataly experience?" attached to a kiosk called Happy or Not. I had never seen such a thing. It's a kiosk that has four buttons that represent levels of happiness using various smiling faces. The faces range from a bold, green, happy smiley to a light green, semi-smiley to a light red, not-so-smiley, and then to a dark red, frowny. Is this the emoticoning of customer service? It seemed like a con for sure, so I promptly jumped on the internet to see what the deal was. I discovered the Happy or Not website, and they recommend the kiosk for gaining customer insight as well as for better understanding your staff. The site boasts that the data this machine captures is completely anonymous, and that it can help you track your customer service and make improvements immediately. Seems like a bold statement when the data one receives is limited to 4 levels of satisfaction with absolutely no specificity for what inspired the green smiling face or the red loathing glare. Then it came across an article on NPR.org that said that the TSA is starting to utilize Happy or Not in order to improve the customer experience of those waiting on TSA lines at the airport. In the article, the author, Lucy Perkins, quotes the woman leading this initiative as saying, quote, "We've learned that the best place to start when diagnosing a citizen problem is data." Wow. Data. This is the first place to start when diagnosing a problem? How about actual customer engagement? How about a person actually checking in with a customer to talk to him about his immediate experience? Perhaps this doesn't create enough data for those who are utilizing the machine. And then there was a testimonial on the Happy or Not site that stated that employees commonly direct their customers to use the kiosk and that this pointed to improved customer engagement with the team. So, when you're shopping and your cashier points to a machine and tells you to play the Happy or Not emoticon game, that this equates to improved customer service? I find the entire premise of this device to be just another stand-in for actual customer contact and care, and it is certainly a dumbing down of customer service that can prevent making a real and meaningful connection with your guests. Call me old-fashioned, but how about asking a simple question? Like, how was your experience today? Or, I would love to know what you think of our store, or products, or experience. Even Dwayne Reed asked their customers online if they found everything they were looking for. It's really that easy. Now, I'm a huge fan of getting feedback from your customers, and I preach the importance of this to my readers, clients, and students. So when a device comes along that attempts to do so, I'm all ears. But an emoticon button is a very weak replacement for an actual person. By removing the human aspect, Happy or Not has just taken the humanity out of customer service, reducing it to data. And that doesn't make me happy at all.
Wow. Thanks, Kate Edwards. That's pretty freaky, reducing the customer experience down to pushing 4 emoji buttons.
When's the last time you filled out one of those little things? How was your experience? They give you a ballpoint pen at a restaurant and some questions.
A long time. I don't even remember. I get a lot of online stuff after I use like a service or a company. They send me a follow-up survey.
Sure. And do you take the survey, though?
I do. I actually enjoy taking surveys, yeah. This sort of reminds me, too, of those pain charts. You know, at the doctor, they have like the happy face pain charts, and you point to like what level of pain you're in if you're nonverbal or don't speak English.
I point to the one that promises the most drugs.
The dark, upside down face.
Right? You know, I got to tell you though, I'm not anti emoticon. I know a lot of people who are because they think it's a real dumbing down of the language. And yes, of course, it is smiley face and all the sort of OMGs and LOLs that have become, you know, stand in for. Well, it isn't really a stand-in for genuine communication. It is communication. That's why I like emoticons, because if I put a smile face on something, if it communicates, then it's actually fulfilling the need of language. So even as a writer, I am not anti-emoji.
Oh, I'm not either. I love emojis. I think they're awesome. I've downloaded a whole bunch of crazy ones, and I get a little carried away with them. But replacing the customer service experience, taking out the human interaction.
I agree with
that
this.
Is like just a little too dumbed down. So I'm with Kate on that one. And speaking of customer service, if you have anything you want to tell us, you can actually contact us via email at info@heritageradionetwork.org because we would love to hear from you. And you can make it more elaborate than 4 different smiley faces.
I guarantee Patrick Martins will respond.
Oh, yes.
He will come to your house with a pork chop.
Don't make promises you can't fulfill. Yeah. But that's it for us. We've gone long this week. But thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network News. Thanks to my co-anchor for the week, Mike Edison, Jack Inslee on sports, calling in from Bonnaroo, Rachel, the producer, who puts it all together for us, and Dave Tatt in the control room. We will see you next week.